Your story is waiting for you today. Your story has something new to say. But your story will only come out to play when you're alone. Alone. Alone in a room with invisible people.
This episode of Alone in the Room with Invisible People contains occasional swearing. This episode of Alone in a Room with Invisible People is sponsored by HollysWritingClasses.com. Hi, I'm Rebecca Gallardo and the host of Alone in a Room with Invisible People. I'm here with author and teacher Holly Lyle, and today's topic is debugging a plot. But before we get to the topic today, we want to talk a little bit about what we're working on currently. So Holly, as always, you take it away first.
I am the initial sacrificial victim.
Yep.
Okay. What I am working on plot-wise right now, I have three separate stories running in... I don't have a title for it yet. I am kind of leaning towards calling it The Owner's Tale, which is the final episode in the Longview series. And what I, plot-wise, I have the story of the owner and the City of Furies. I have the story of Shay and Melly. And I have the story of Herrig and Katie as my three core stories that I am carrying through and wrapping up in this final episode. And with each of those, I have to pick up from where I left these two people previously, or in the case of the owner and the City of Furies, where I left the owner and this one final big obstacle that I bring up in Viper's Nest. And I don't want to give that away as a spoiler, because this wasn't written in 1995. This was written, you know, a couple of weeks ago and finished. And most people have not yet read it.
Yeah.
So
the 90s spoiler alert doesn't, you know, it doesn't count.
does not apply here. No. Yeah. So that's what I'm working on. How about you?
Yeah. Well, I'm working on right now, I know I mentioned this very, very briefly in the last one, but I'm doing this ghost story anthology, and you and Matt read the first one, and I was really, really happy with your feedback. I was concerned about it, kind of, and Matt definitely gave me some really cool ideas on what he thought the initial thing was, but it also pointed out that I needed to tone down just a little bit of the details, because in the 3,000 words, again, I'm going through your how to write short stories, and I went ahead and took that challenge of the 3,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
So I put aside the romance stories I was writing to write this ghost anthology, because I need more work. And so
don't
now
we
I
all?
Have what? Yeah, don't we
don't
all?
We all?
Yeah. So now I have probably up to about 7 or 8 different plots that I'm creating for this anthology. And I had to tone myself down, because I'm like, okay, well, chill out. Let's just work on those, and then we'll add some more. But it's really, really a lot of fun to just be able to play with this really dark kind of humor in some of them, and some of them are not humorous. And so I'm working on many different plots there. And when it's 3,000 words, that doesn't, once you've taken your how to write flash fiction course, 3,000 words is like, oh my God, it's a freaking Disney World playland.
Massive
of words.
Elbow room.
Yes. But then, because of the way you break it down, you have to do words per scene. So it's basically like a flash fiction story every freaking scene. I'm like, no, this is supposed to be tons and tons of room to play, but it's not. It's just more flash fiction. But yeah, it's so I'm working on a whole bunch of plots for those, and I'm really excited. I am just, I love ghosts, and I couldn't even get away from it after I put Glass House aside. I couldn't even get away from paranormal long enough to fully publish a book, because I'm still waiting on my bug hunters back. I only got one back so far, which was amazing, because it was the same day I sent it out, basically.
Wow.
I was like, holy crap. This episode is going to be about debugging a plot. So Why don't you first define what a plot is for us? It very clear.
Okay, people get really hung up on plots. Plot is your protagonist versus your antagonist. Now, this is your main character versus either your villain or a specific conflict in a setting with a twist. Okay, and let me explain just a little bit there. An antagonist in a story can sometimes be Hemingway's Old Man in the Sea. It can be the atmosphere, the setting, the weather, some horrific thing, a meteor getting ready to slam into the planet and wipe out half of the world.
So an antagonist is not always a villain.
An antagonist is not always a villain. That's exactly right. If you have an antagonist that isn't a villain, like a meteor getting ready to slam into the planet, then you are going to, and you're writing a longer story, you are going to be looking at having characters who act in the interests of the antagonist. Looters or criminal masterminds or wicked governments who are using this coming disaster as a way to leverage their own interests over the survival of the species. So you can have an antagonist that is not human, but if you have an antagonist that is not human, then you have to personify the conflict with people as well.
That is really, really awesome. I'm sure that you have described it in this method before, but I don't remember it ever being quite so poignant, I guess, or quite so just immediate in my head, because, you know, we have hurricanes on the East Coast, the Southeast Coast, all the time.
Oh, yes.
And knocking on wood here, they said that this hurricane season is supposed to be a little bit lighter, so that's good.
Yes, and if they could ever predict the weather, I would be much more enthused.
Yes. but we'll see. However, that is just such an amazing way to visualize it, is that your hurricane is your antagonist, but you have other conflict visualized, right, or brought together in human form, like the looters, like people who during 9/11, there was a lot of murders that went unsolved because people took advantage of a very, very awful situation to do things like gang murders and stuff like that. So that, looking at the hurricane, that is an amazing way to create a story, using an antagonist and using, you know, all of these human elements.
The setting has to be relevant. You can't set a hurricane story in Montana.
Nope.
You can't set, wait, but you could set a meteor story anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On, well, I mean, within the range of where we'd be able to get, you can't set a meteor story on the sun, so
no,
that's pretty cool.
That's true, right?
Yeah, there are still limitations.
There, yes, and setting your limitations is one of the most important things you can do in debugging your plot, because if you find out that you have not created a limitation like this, where your setting is irrelevant to your story, then that's one of the things that you have to debug. And then, of course, there is the twist. And twist, people have such a hard time understanding what a twist is and why it matters. The twist is the reason you're telling the story in the first place. The twist is when you have this hero and you have this horrible disaster. The twist is not just how the hero makes it through the disaster, but how the hero rescues someone else, or how the hero saves everyone, or I don't know. I loved the movie Armageddon. It had, first off, it had Bruce Willis. And
Yeah,
I'm such a geeky fangirl. I thought, I love him.
Yeah, and no surprise that he has similar features and whatnot to your husband.
He does, actually. My husband's cuter, but, you know.
oh, God.
But anyway.
This is when you run into the issues of a mother-daughter podcast.
This is true. Okay, so anyway, though, he goes to the planet. He and his guys who drill save the planet. They freaking save the whole planet. And at the last minute, he has the choice of going back or having the girl, the guy that his daughter loves, survive to go, hopefully survive to go back.
Yeah.
And the guy pulls the straw. The girl's boyfriend pulls the short straw. So Willis rides down in the little elevator thing with him and screws up his oxygen right there at the exit so that Willis is the one who has to go. I get a little teary-eyed just thinking about this.
Yeah, you can hear it in your voice, too.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
But this is, that was the twist, was not just that he was the man responsible for saving everyone, but that he saved what his daughter loved most in the world at the end of it. Yeah. And my God, that's a twist.
Yeah.
That he acted on his own values, on what he believed was most important, and got that other guy home.
Yeah, and speaking of all of the limitations that you were talking about, using limitations in that world, let's just say it's from the point where they hit the rock and they have to start drilling. Limitations made that plot, made that part of the plot amazing, all the way down to, like you said, that there was drawing the straws. Ben Affleck drew the straw, and even as a child I was like, yes, and it didn't happen because poor Bruce Willis. Oh yeah, more plot, you know, more spoilers, but again, this is like what, 98, 2001, something like that. So
right.
So limitations, and then he knew, you know, if he took out Ben Affleck's oxygen, then he would not be able to survive long enough to stand there and do the job. So he would have to go back into the ship. He would have to go back into with his other. So again, it's all about limitations. And when you had said limitations is key into debugging the plot, I found that really powerful, because you're looking at different limitations. You gave this character a set of limitations too. It's either him or his daughter's loved one. And he loved his daughter enough to set that up for her, to give her future instead of leaving her with her past. Yeah. And I always thought that was, I guess there's two versions of me, the hopeless romantic that loves it, but also the woman that's sitting there basically saying that, well, you damn them to an eternity of marriage because there ain't no way either of them is going to get divorced.
You know, like, that never crossed my mind.
My dad died on an asteroid to save your life and to keep us married. So that like on either side of the argument, they can never get a divorce. Like,
this is true.
Thanks, Dad.
So you really got to hope that one works out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So basically that what you're saying is a plot is a protagonist versus the antagonist in any form that you've got,
right,
in a setting with a twist. So you've covered, you know, the setting, the protagonist, the antagonist, which was really awesome, and then the twist, because the twist is not always like the M. Night Shyamalan, or sorry if I murdered his last name there, the ever-present twist that he has in everything, where, you know, another spoiler alert about Bruce Willis, Sixth Sense, he's dead. So this is the Bruce Willis episode. But yeah, so you're looking at a different way to put in a twist. I like that.
Yeah.
So why don't you go on to the next part? Like, as far as debugging a plot, let's say you have a plot that's gone awry. What are you looking for first? I like that you were mentioning limitations as well.
Right. Well, that's what you look for first, is you have to first, before everything else, debug your conflict. Because if the story is weak, or if the story is going wrong, or if it's just kind of lying there dead on the page, the problem is the conflict. And beginning writers especially, but all writers eventually, will do something to make things a little easier for your character. Because you start falling in love with the character, with your main character, and you're saying, oh man, I can't do that to them. That's just too mean. Wrong. You think of the worst thing you can do to the character. And then you add a little bit more, and then you twist the knife. And then, so with the Bruce Willis, the movie Armageddon. We're just discussing. Yeah, huh? Armageddon. Yes, thank you. It's just a really good example of, okay, well, we've just found out that this thing is coming at the Earth, and it's really close. Okay, now, how are we going to fix it? And, well, we don't have a way to fix it. Well, how about we get these guys who can drill? Well, these guys who drill are a bunch of fuck-ups and a bunch of social misfits and outcasts and idiots and drunks and just this...
Hound dogs.
Yes, hound dogs, yes.
Yes.
And they have, all of them have a strength, but all of them have these weaknesses that are even bigger than their strengths. And together they look like a disaster. So then they're supposed to show this bunch of really smart space guys, you know, the astronaut team, how to drill. And they say, no, we can't do that. You guys can't do this. You just don't have the years of experience. You're going to go up there. You're going to get everybody on the planet killed.
Well, the fun thing is, too, you've got both sides of that. The yeah. astronauts are sitting there saying, well, we went through 10, 15 years of specialized training.
Yeah. To be able to go up into space and not die.
Yeah.
And to live long enough to carry out this mission. Yeah, but you can't do the mission, so shut up.
Yeah.
We have to go. And so then that's a problem, because the misfits and the idiots are going to space. And then after that, well, they land, one of the ships gets hit by asteroids, I guess.
Yeah, it was just crashes. A part of the asteroid coming off, I think,
right.
Or some of the gas.
And it gets crashed way away from the thing. So everything, every time you think, okay, well, now they've got a chance, they jump the ditch, and they make it there, and the drill breaks, and yes. the drill bit breaks, and the time is running out, and there's a clock, and this asshat of a commander decides to betray them by setting a nuke live to blow up the thing, which isn't going to work. It's going to
yeah,
impact
that's
on the
surface. What I loved. I
yeah.
loved that this jackass goes up there with the plan B that nobody mm-hmm. knows about and decides that's how he's going to solve it. But then Bruce Willis, the main character, is like, it's not going to work. It's
right.
it's or I think it was Bruce Willis that said that. But the point was that they had to drill because it had to reach a certain depth
right.
to shatter the asteroid.
Right. So at each point in the story, at the point where you think, okay, now it's going to work, something else breaks. And that, from the perspective of the plot, I know it's a potboiler kind of plot, but from the perspective of the plot, that is the single best definition I can think of a story where conflict is king. And it's not little conflict.
It's
if
big
one
conflict.
Thing goes wrong, the whole planet is gone.
Yeah.
Everybody dies. The whole freaking world.
You and Matt and Joe need to watch Lost in Space, the Netflix remake or reboot.
Okay.
Because the first episode is one of the most conflict is king episodes of something that I have seen. Mm-hmm. It builds and it builds and it builds. It is Murphy's Law. If something can go wrong, it's gonna go wrong. And it is one of the strongest first episodes with when it comes to acting and cinematography. Yeah, it's gorgeous, it's well acted. But the conflict, I was sitting there, and I don't usually get that kind of intense about stuff because I feel that it's not usually written that well. It's usually giving you breaks and stuff. No, there's no breaks. This is all, oh my God.
Yes.
And it's very tense. And that's what you're talking about with the plot, is it's just conflict building and building and building.
Right. The thing about it, and the thing that I am betting makes what you watched work, and the thing that makes what I saw work, is that nothing is inconsequential. Every character flaw has a purpose.
Absolutely.
Every character skill has a purpose. Everything that is in there with the characters and that is in there with what goes wrong, it all matters.
Yes.
And it is so easy to start throwing in just this little side information about, well, this character likes this thing and this character goes to these places. But if the character goes to a bar routinely and something horrible doesn't happen in the bar, you have wasted that characteristic. If a character likes to sing and either something doesn't happen to the character's voice or the character does not somehow save the situation by singing, you have wasted that characteristic.
Yeah.
You have thrown something in there that doesn't matter. With plotting and with making your plot work, everything has to count.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, yes, no, so it's absolutely right. I'm not going to say anything about Lost in Space specifically because that's something I want you guys to watch.
Not 1995.
Yeah, no spoilers. it's not the 90s, 2000 version of Lost in Space because unfortunately it's missing Gary Oldman, which is the only thing that could have made it better in my opinion. But if we take Firefly, for instance, you have characters that have, you know, intense flaws, intense good things about them. But you said about a character going to a bar. Mal can't stand the Alliance, was a brown coat. He was against unification. And he finds himself in a unification bar or an Alliance-friendly bar on Unification Day every single year. There's a reason for that. There's using all of these things about the character that we already know to create conflict because immediately, of course, he starts a fight. And it's just, and Jane doesn't want to get involved. And it's just this awesome thing with all of these characters that are doing things. And it moves it because it's using things about the characters to create conflict.
Right.
And sometimes it can be using things about the antagonist or the setting to create conflict. I love that. So conflict, I know that you said this last time, but let's just cover this just in case for somebody who has not, listened to the last episode. Define conflict very briefly for us.
Conflict? I don't even remember how I defined it in the last one. I do this stuff right off the top of my head.
You say it's always the same. It's conflict is not an argument. That's what you say.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah. This is true. Conflict is not an argument. Conflict is something that matters to the character. It is the thing that is most essential to the character that is either withheld or that is the character's objective to obtain. And if your character's conflict is that his girlfriend and his whole world is going to be demolished by an asteroid, then the thing that is most important to obtain is first her survival, and by in consequence to that, as like the second thing that's most important is the saving of the planet, which, you know, is the thing that he has to do to save the girl. It is save the cat. Wherein, yeah. this is how you know that someone is the hero, is because even if you haven't seen them do something in the beginning, even if you haven't seen anything good about them yet, if they save the cat, if they do this small good thing that benefits them not at all, then you understand, okay, this is the good guy, and we'll see this later. And you see that a lot with Mal. Where you know, he has all of these opportunities to do bad things and he does some bad things.
Or, you know, he's basically this good pirate, and he's got these two people on his ship that could net him a lot of money. But it would go against his convictions to turn them in for the money, especially considering that it would be turning him into the Alliance, which he hates. So it's about what your main character wants.
Right. Right. The conflict is the thing that he needs most or wants most or desires most in the world. And then the thing that stands between him and obtaining it, or her.
Okay. What makes a reader kind of relate to, I guess, the character or be interested in that conflict? Because sometimes stories can be so big and generalized and just it's... you don't care.
Right, right. This is true. And as the writer, it is very easy to get so sucked up in your own world building and your own cool characters and your own fascinations and interests and side trails that you can lose sight of what the reader is going to be taking away from what you're doing. So the next thing in debugging your plot is to read like a reader rather than to read like a writer. Because the writer part of you is going to be seeing all this cool characterization you did and all of these cool little twists that you threw into the story and all of these little areas where you created a spectacular language and it really holds together well and you are able to tell jokes in your own language, which... hey, you laugh.
No, I know you did this. Yes, I'm aware.
I had culture-specific jokes in Bones of the Past where I built the culture and I was doing, it was either cannibal jokes or headhunter jokes. It could have been either one because the Hoos had both. Okay, but there is this point where you get so caught up in this awesome world building and characterization and complexity that you lose sight of the fact that the story is what the reader is there for. The story is there for your people, and the story, the reader is there for what they do and how they go from what they want and can't have to what they finally achieve or don't, you know, depending on
someone who does that really well, other than you, because I've read your books, obviously, and you do that well. George R. R. Martin.
Yes.
He is very, very good at reading like a reader, I suppose, because when you read his books, like you've mentioned, there's no fat on the bone.
Right. Right. No, he's now he does get way too caught up in his own world building and he loses things.
Okay. But, yeah, that could be.
But... Which is why I have not finished reading the books, is because he killed off all the characters I liked.
Okay.
But, well, except for one, but yeah, and she's so buried in the thing now that, but the point of that is that reading as a reader, you have to understand why you want people to go into your story in the first place. That's the conflict you set up.
Okay, so actually George R. R. Martin is kind of lost in his own world at that point. So he's kind of, and of course these are all just our opinions and everything. So that's, yeah. Right.
And not bagging on George R. R. Martin. I love several books.
A brilliant writer.
yeah, he truly is. But he did lose me.
Okay. Yeah. So he got lost in his own world and killing off all of these people is, you know, his Joss Whedon fun. So what, as far as you go, so you have to read like a reader. You have to continue to remember what's important to the reader.
Right. And the reader needs a story. And that story needs to be coherent and cohesive and have parts that ask a question and then parts that answer a question. And that's really important and sometimes very hard to deliver because it is easy to suffer from casting call overindulgence and have a bunch of characters show up for your story that you feel like you need to give them parts. And then you have to go through and weed them out. And
yeah, because sometimes you do, like with Brock, and sometimes you don't, like with the dude from Prince Trucking. You're stuck in between. It is that casting call kind of, oh, wow, well, this guy showed up and he's fantastic. Is he a Jerry Ortega or is he somebody that is basically just supposed to be a dude sitting in a diner? Yeah.
Right. Right. And it is very easy to lose track because it's just if you are doing this right, and by doing this right, I mean you are sitting down and you're doing regular words every day and you are letting your right brain push things onto the page based on what your left brain has kind of set up as you know, a rough outline, and my outlines are about as rough as they get. And then my right brain comes in and it does all this awesome stuff and I am watching my fingers type and weird things are coming out on the page that I didn't expect, that make me cry or that make me laugh or that catch my attention. And some of them are right for the story, and some of them aren't. And in first draft, you let them go. You let them hit the page. Now, if you realize partway through that you have taken a serious wrong turn.
Like Wreck of Heaven,
Closer to Chaos. Yeah, oh, God, the Wreck of Heaven. Yeah, that's Closer to Chaos was the first version of that book. And it was the reason I will never use chaos in another title again, is because...
it was chaos. It was basically, you know, tempting the muse.
Oh, now, it was...
With that in mind,
yes.
Debugging a plot. So let's go over a couple of scenarios even.
Okay.
Where because I have something very specific in mind that your limitations mentioned brought me in. You have a story, and maybe you're a pantser, maybe you're an outliner, maybe it got the better of you, kind of like Wreck of Heaven in its original form did for you. Mm-hmm. You are going crazy. You've got amazing characters, or maybe even like Talismana did for you. So either one of those two. People keep popping up. Stories keep changing. I think a big part of that, and I've read published books that I guess they were more indie, or maybe from Alora's Cave or something like that, where they weren't, you know, traditionally published, and it was mostly in... ebook format, so maybe they weren't edited as much as they could have, because they're still making money on them. I don't know how that works, but it looks like the characters a lot of times have this Mary Sue like quality, which we're gonna have to go over a Mary Sue in an entire episode. But they have the ability to do anything. They can do all these magical things. They can do everything, and the world has, you know, no real limitations either. It's got all of these different things. I think that your limitations, you're mentioning that, is a huge way to pull your plot back.
Mm-hmm.
to fix, because you don't know where to go. If your characters can do everything and anything, if the world holds nothing for them, no conflicts, no obstacles, there are no limitations, your reader isn't going to care.
Right. Jim Bain was my first publisher, and one of the most important things he ever said to me, and he said it while rejecting a project that Christy Golden and I put together and tried to sell him, was, if anything can happen, nothing matters.
Nice.
And that is the core of limitations in your story, is if anything can happen, then there is nothing to throw your character against, and nothing to give your reader something to hang on to. It's like having the meteor coming towards the planet and being able to wave a hand and magic it away.
Yeah, with there's no conflict. There's no, right. there's no internal angst for the reader to root for this character either. Part of debugging a plot, and I wanted to mention this, is people get in a hole and they get stuck in this basically this area where they think they created a problem they can't get out of. Mm-hmm. A lot of people's answer to that is to give the character another skill. Is
yes.
to give them a magic skill, or to give them you know, suddenly they can kung fu, or suddenly they can do parkour. Mm-hmm. And it's not working within your limitations, because it's easier, and working within your limitations is more difficult. But I can tell you from personal experience, it's also more rewarding. So
right.
how would you go about trying to figure out, and this is hard without any real life examples, I'm sure, but how would you go about trying to find that answer to your plot hole question?
This really isn't that hard, because this is where I live.
especially in space.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. Yes, where there are these temptations to make things easy because, well, hey, you have super good technology. And in the world that I'm writing in, I have awesome technology. But the technology must be a problem more than it is a solution. and the characters must depend on their own abilities and their own strengths and stuff that they pull up from, you know, their toenails to save their asses.
And this is the same for you with magic too, not just technology, but magic. You always say that the magic has to be more the problem than the solution.
Right.
Is this something that goes towards reader relatability because they don't have these skills? So,
well, yeah, that's if you have somebody who can do everything, nobody can relate to that because we are all mortal. We are all fragile creatures, and we are limited, vastly limited in what we know how to do and our skills and in spite of the fact that we would love to see ourselves as superpowered.
Yeah.
Doing that as a character that you are trying to sell is death. So what you do with this in this case is when you get a character into a situation where they are in trouble, you hurt them. You give them a bigger problem. You sit there and you say, okay, well, here's where they are right now. I have someone who is trapped in a city where he cannot escape. And I'm gonna actually pull this out of something that I'm doing right now. I have a character who is trapped in the city where he cannot escape. He is being monitored. He is not being forced to do anything. He is allowed to leave, but if he leaves, he won't be able to get back to the person that he loves. But he has been given the opportunity to either take shit work or to take the work that someone sent him there to do, that he kind of wants to do because it's important. So in order for him to do that and create, I'm going to make everything as difficult for him as possible. I am going to limit what he is able to do. I am going to take away the awesome military power that he has at his disposal. I am going to take away all of the allies that he thought he was going to be able to count on. I am going to take away every single advantage that he thought he was going to have. And with him basically having nothing, no tools, no weapons, no allies, have him figure out how to defend a city with nothing.
I love that. I love that you... So basically, if you're stuck in this world where you have all this technology working, the power goes out. If you are stuck in the point where you have magic abilities and you can do so much, if you're a writer and your first instinct is, let's give her the magic, your next instinct should be... And this is a case where the inner critic takes over. The next... Yeah. That area, the inner critic should say, no, Muse, let's... Since magic always costs something, since there is always a price for magic, let's double down on that. Let's say she can't reach her magical abilities, or her magic abilities are affected by a certain situation she's in, and it backfires.
Right. Or she can reach her magical abilities, but if she does it, she is going to spend half of her life right that minute. That she is that however long her life might have been, and I did this to a character in Mind of Magic. She had the magical ability to try to save someone she loved. But in order to do it, she had to pay with a portion of her own life. And she did. And he didn't live anyway.
Oh, geez. So, now I know what happens in Mind of the Magic.
Well,
damn it.
Kinda, no, you don't. This is a very, very tiny part of it. And okay. A complete side story.
But it's important because it's also shows how very... harrowing my mother's work is, dear God. So that's the whole thing is if you feel the instinct to try to come up with a new skill or try to, I think it would actually be more humorous and better. Let's just say you're sitting there and the only way she can get out of it is to Kung Fu, but she doesn't know Kung Fu. Your initial reaction is, let's give her Kung Fu skills. Internet critic needs to come in and say, no, let's let her think she can Kung Fu.
Yeah.
So she tries to do some kind of kick that she's seen on TV or read in books, and it just falters and she falls on her ass and the villains laugh at her. I mean, it's
I did
talk
that
about
in
a relatable
Armorella.
Moment. Do what?
Yeah, I did that in Armorella, which is free on my website.
Oh, yes.
As, yeah, it's just a story that's right there where the main character thought she was an expert swordswoman.
Yes, I didn't even think about that. That was, I'm reading the description when I read Armorella, and that was that one with your how to write short stories.
Yeah,
because that was one of the examples. And yes. She's doing these twisty things, and I'm like, what is she doing? And I loved it when the other character that's there, and I'm trying not to give away anything else, but even the other character that was there with her is like, what is this? it was a funny moment, and
yeah.
I didn't even think about that, because I was just thinking sometimes the easy answer can give us the right answer if we twist it.
Right. And that is what a twist is. That is exactly a twist, which is, well, she thinks she can do this, so she uses this skill. The skill backfires on her, but the backfire actually pays off in a way nobody expected.
Yes, it did. Yeah, that was adorable and kind of wrong in a way.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I love that it can be as simple as your muse wanting to throw everything at the wall and your inner critic, a point where you should listen to your inner critic. Mm-hmm. Your inner critic is saying, no, but I respect the idea, so let's mess it up. How can we make that happen wrong?
Right. You are always, 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 always working to hurt your main character. This is the job. You're laughing. I see you laughing.
I was also groaning slightly because it's so painful.
It is painful, but it's true. It is, if you are going to keep your reader engaged with what you're doing, your main character needs to fall on her face and skin her knees and break her heart and do something stupid and embarrass herself horribly in public and be ashamed and lose a friend. And at the end of it, because she has done all of these things, something in there pays off. Some one little thing that you didn't expect and that just kind of landed on the page as this tiny little flower growing in the midst of a barren waste of hell and kittens, just where everything has gone wrong, and all of a sudden this one little thing goes right, and that one little thing is what saves her. I have said this before and will say it again, I never know what the ending of my story is going to be. I think I do. I always go galloping right up to the ending thinking, yeah, I got this, and I have it on a plot card, and it is a specific thing that I know is going to be good. And then I'm almost there, and I have broken everything. I've crushed my characters. I've hurt them so badly. And then my right brain says, oh, by the way, that ending that you planned, that's not what's going to happen. This is what's going to happen, and it's going to happen because this other horrible thing happens, and somebody you really loved is going to die. And you're going, oh, my God, no, I can't kill him. I love him. But it's perfect. So you do it, and it gives you this gripping, wonderful ending. And yeah, so anyway, that was the 3-book secret text trilogy where I was writing to the ending I knew through 3 books. And the day I wrote the ending was the day I had the idea for it. And it came out of nowhere, and it was so much better than what I'd planned.
With debugging, what are other some of the other, because you get questions all the time about these kind of things. So before we head up to any sort of wrapping up or anything actionable items, give me some examples of people who are having plot issues that come to you for help with the plots. I think one of them would be that you're not adding enough conflict in there. And
right.
We've already defined conflict as what it is. So it's not arguments. It's not fights. It's the cause of the arguments and the fights,
right?
Basically.
Right. So, it's what matters to the character and how you deliver on that after punishing the character for having it matter.
So we've got not enough conflict. We've got not setting limitations on your characters or your worlds, because I believe that you said this one of the times when we were talking, it might have been during an episode, that limitations is the whole reason for writing fiction. I think that was actually just maybe even between you and me.
Right, right. That is the reason you write fiction, is to set up these barriers, these limitations that your characters have to overcome. And the stronger and better your limitations, the stronger and better your story will be. Okay. And along with the struggle that the character has to get through them.
Yeah, which is the conflict. Having a solid reasoning for your antagonist and everything is just mm-hmm. as important as having solid everything for your main character, right. For your protagonist.
Beyond that, you can have way too many characters. You can throw in characters who are interesting and funny and witty, but they have no purpose in this story. In which case, save those characters because you can use them later. And you can have side stories that derail your story, where you get so caught up in these secondary characters doing this really spiffy thing that you lose your main story, in which case, after you write it, you're going to have to extract that story and make it its own separate story.
Which isn't a bad thing at all, that you've got more stories to write. It's just you have to know what's what.
Right.
You have to keep in mind the story, I guess, and the plot of mm-hmm. the one that you're writing right now. Okay.
Right. And I pantsed Talismana.
Yes.
And I am not a heavy plotter. I have never been a heavy plotter. My idea of plotting is to take a bunch of note cards, write a sentence on each one that's kind of what a scene is going to be, throw them down on the floor, scoot them around until they go into what looks like a kind of sequential story, sort of, or a sequential back and forth, or, I'll come up with some sort of a scheme. And then I put those plot cards into Scrivener, and then I promptly change fucking everything.
See, and I am, that's one of the very few areas where we are completely different. I am a very heavy plotter. And if I come up with something new or something different, then I find a way to fit it into the original plot.
Yeah.
That is so weird.
Yeah, it's whereas I will use the main planned beats of the story. I have managed, in spite of myself and my wildly prolific right brain, to stick through five episodes and now working on the sixth of the Longview series with this one core story that I have not changed one bit, which for me is a damn miracle.
That's unheard of.
It is, because everything, seriously, right up until the ending, everything is still fluid, everything still changes. But because I had to publish these one episode at a time, there is stuff in that has to be locked down.
Oh.
So
you actually limited yourself even more.
I did. I did. I completely, by writing it and publishing it one episode at a time, I set some massive limitations for myself that made things really, really difficult. And at the same time, that kept me from running amok, and that allowed me to fix the story physics that I broke in Hunting the Corrigan's Blood. So, it got better there. It's very, very easy for me to put down a plot and then promptly write everything that I didn't do in the plot as the story itself, because I fight with my brains. The two of them have this evil competition with each other, where the left brain does the plotting, the right brain says, no, I'm not going to write that, I'm going to write this that's better. The left brain then takes what the right brain writes and twists it around into something completely different and new. And the story that I end up with is completely different. So yeah, it's this very fluid process, and I don't know what I'm writing until the revision, when I start getting a feel. But plotting is so different for everybody. But the things that you want to look out for are, do I have too many characters for this story? If you're writing a 3,000-word story, you have room for two main characters and maybe a third side character. And that's pretty much it. If you're writing a 250,000-word book, you can have, the cast of a Cecil B. DeMille's movie in there. Thousands of extras. But don't give them names.
Yeah, don't.
Because you are making promises with every name you make, with every name you create, with every character that you start giving weight. you are making promises to the reader that these people are going to mean something.
So part of debugging would also be pay attention to the cast. Pay attention yes. to the promises that you're making.
Yes. Oh, God. Paying attention to your promises is essential.
We're going to have to hit this topic again, I think. Just a shout out to our listeners. If you have any questions, especially on specific plots or specific problems that you're having, shoot us a question, because we can always do side stories to mm-hmm. to kind of come back to debugging a plot, because we're giving very specific but also very generalized information here. Mm-hmm. And if there's something that you can kind of generalize within your own work, you can send us an email. It's at show@alonewithinvisiblepeople.com. And, you know, give us an example, something that we can work on for maybe a side story or even a second episode of this.
Right. Now, it's important to mention that we will not read manuscripts.
No, so we will not read manuscripts. We will not read stories. Yeah, don't send anything like that.
But if you want to sum up something, yeah. if you want to do like a 200 or 200 word synopsis of what you have written that you're having a problem with and the specific problem that you're having, we can... you know, take 15 or 20 minutes to make a little separate side story episode and use that just as an extra thing.
We can take 3, 4, 5 examples, something like that. And and we won't get specific with the story. We won't get specific with the names, nothing like that.
No, or you will be anonymous.
Yeah, you will be anonymous. So we just want to be able to give more specific examples, because this is a very, very important topic. This is your whole book, and mm-hmm. and it hits on so many levels. We're talking limitations, we're talking characters, we're talking conflict, we're talking an antagonist, we're talking about limiting your characters or having a whole bunch of promises that you can't keep, or it's a fascinating topic, and it's something that we could easily do a couple more episodes on.
Oh yeah, plotting, you know, you could just have a show on just plotting. Never write something that doesn't matter to you. If you are chasing a trend, if you are thinking that you are going to make the big bucks by writing stories in something that's hot now, like, let's go with paranormal, romance, shifters, and say, monkey shifters just got really big. Okay, let's say that you hate monkeys, and you hate paranormal, and you're not big on romance, but there are 15 writers who are making $500,000 a month writing paranormal, monkey, romance, shifters, and you think, yeah, I want to get on that wagon train. Don't. Just don't. If you are trying to write something that does not matter to you, you are going to suck.
Yeah, and the readers are going to be able to tell it doesn't matter. If they read what you're writing, it's going to be like, wow, does this person hate monkeys or what? I mean, it's going to show.
Yes, because you are all of your characters. We discussed this a little bit in characters. You are every character's every thought. And no matter how different you make your characters, by pulling from yourself your passions or your hatreds and giving little subsets of them to different people and making them all very differentiated, they're all still you, and they're always still going to be you. And if you don't give a shit about the story you're writing, that is going to come through, and it's going to come through to everybody who reads it. So that's basically, if you don't write what you love, if you don't write. Yeah. So be passionate. Find the things in your life that make you get out of bed in the morning. Well, and
the other thing that's a good point to mention when you're talking about the odds are, and this is not necessarily 100% true, but the odds are that the people making the most money in that area are people who love what they were writing.
Right.
A lot of people, if you read the Twilight books, which I know, you know, you're looking at two people who can't stand the character of Bella Swan, who can't stand the character of her boyfriend, the vampire, who can't stand that series. Taking apart just not even looking at the writing necessarily, just taking a look at the characters. If you look at Stephanie Meyer, I don't think she looked at this like somebody who Because what Holly is saying is very important, and this is something that she pointed out in the book that I wrote that she had just recently read, Leaving Wanda Lucia. When she read that, she said, I saw a lot of you in there in places that you didn't know you put yourself in. Mm-hmm. So to me, Stephanie Meyer wrote that book for somebody like her. Yeah. She very much probably wanted to have someone who loved her to the point where they were practically stalking her. And I'm not trying to be nasty. I'm not trying to be mean, but she wanted somebody to adore her and did not see in herself all of these qualities that she probably has that is worthy of love. So she might even see herself as the Bella Swan character, who had no redeeming features as far as I knew.
Right.
And she wanted to be rescued. A lot of women want to be rescued. I don't see her writing this thing as this, I want to make people who want to be rescued feel good. I think it was more of, I want to write this story about something that I would want to happen for me.
Right.
And that's why it got so popular. There's so many other people out there that can relate to the Twilight series, most of them younger teenagers, but even my best friend from high school, she was in her mid-20s, early 20s, or late 20s at that point. She loves that series. It is one of her favorite series ever. And it shows the different personalities between myself and her.
Right. So, yeah, Stephanie Meyer, I respect the crap out of the fact that she wrote those books and that she wrote what she wanted to read.
Yes.
And she put that out there. And it just happens that there are a whole lot of people who were desperate to find what she wanted to read. And the thing is, no matter who you are, if you have a passion, you have something that you love, and it's not something that other people are writing, write that. Not yeah. because it's going to make you a ton of money, but because there is somebody else out there right now waiting to read that thing that person shares with you and loves with you and thinks, I am the only person in the world who has ever felt this way. And yeah. if you write that story, you will find out how many people out there who aren't you have also felt that way.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I was thinking that's the other reason not to write something that just because it's popular is right. because you don't know what's going to be popular next. You don't know that what you feel inside and what you are passionate about and what you need to get out of yourself and into paper, you don't know that that's going to not be the next Stephanie Meyer. It might be, and it might not be. You got to look at this as something that you are passionate about, whether or not you make a penny on it or not. It's got to mm-hmm. be something that you want to find your people. You want to get your stories out there. With the romance that I just wrote, I felt very, very passionate about the theme. I felt very passionate about the theme, but I'm also really good at seeing both sides. So I know whether or not my traditional publishers, you know, that I send this off to, what if I get a decline from every single one of them, I don't care. I'm putting it out. I'm going to self-publish that thing because I am so passionate about what's in there that at this point, it's not about the money. Just, you don't know what's going to strike people, but I can tell you that there are more people out there in this world that feel the same way that you do than you think. And mm-hmm. don't look at something as trending as that's the next thing you need to hit, because by the time it's trending,
by the time it's published trending,
yes.
it's already over.
That is a big thing in the screenplay world, is by the time something is trending in the public, they've already moved on to the next thing. So just don't worry about what is popular right now. Don't worry about what, you know, the hipsters are reading, or the, you know, worry about what you want to write. Worry yeah. about the stories you want to tell and the themes that are important to you, because those are going to have the most impact. And when you write them, that emotional bit of you is going to carry over.
Right. Right. Keep your eye always when you're plotting, when you're going over your plot, everything on why does this matter to me personally? I think that's probably more than anything else, the thing that will help you write stories that other readers will want to read is writing selfishly, saying, I am writing this story for myself because it matters to me. Not because 10,000 people or 100,000 people or a million people are going to want to buy it, but because this story matters to me.
Yeah. And it's going to make a bigger impact on the people that read it and feel it anyway.
Yeah.
Because if the people find your book and it's something that mattered to them too, it's going to matter a whole lot more, you know, when they read it and they can tell that you're passionate about it. Yeah.
Right. Right. That sort of honesty, integrity comes through in the writing.
Yeah. So why don't you wrap this up for us and give us some takeaway or actionable items, something, an actionable item that somebody can maybe look at their plot right now.
Okay. When you are looking at something that you have written, and again, at the point where you look at it is after you have finished the whole story, you don't mess around and twiddle with bits until the whole story is done. But once you have the first draft written, you go through and you read it and you say, okay, do I care about the conflict? And remember, conflict is not argument. Conflict is what your main character cares about and the obstacles that stand between him or her and obtaining it. Okay, next, do you, when you read this story, want your protagonist to succeed? Or are you reading this thing going, you whiny bastard, I want to watch you die horribly? And having written some characters like that, that's a problem, and that's a big thing in the plotting that you have to fix in revision. Okay, and finally, give your antagonist a role that would change everything and a reason. So you have to care about the character and you have to care about the conflict, but then you have to look at what the character is doing and make sure that everything that is in there, that these little tiny characteristics you give the character, like he loves cats, comes back in the end as part of the solution to the problem. That everything that is in there matters. Everything is there for a reason. Everything means something. And you don't have to get it right in first draft. But this is what you're looking for when you have the first draft done and you're getting ready to fix it. Is do I have people just standing out there talking about watering their lawns? And if the grass isn't going to grow up and strangle them in their sleep, well, we really don't care about their lawns, do we?
Yeah, that's... And probably checking for limitations too, because
yes,
yeah, we went over quite a bit of the limitations in there as well.
Right. Yeah, yes. Always check to make sure that you have given them that every time you have given them a chance for something to go easy, you have made it go wrong and made it harder on them instead.
Yeah. So again, make sure that if you have any specific plots that you can sum up without giving away too much of your story within about 200, 250 words, if you have any specific questions or problems that you know you're having, feel free to shoot us a very short summed up email at show@alonewithinvisiblepeople.com. Again, we won't read manuscripts, we won't read stories, we won't read anything, you know, not even something that's, you know, maybe, 1,500 words, doesn't matter. We will not read that stuff.
No, that but gets deleted, can, unread.
Yes, because, deleted, yeah, unread.
Is, yeah, because that is a possible copyright liability. Yes. So yes.
You're looking at two people who are writing and publishing, and yeah, we do not even play that game. So
no.
You know, it don't send any attachments. If there's an attachment, unfortunately, I'm going to delete your email. So all you got to do is just sum up the problem or a basic issue you're having within about 200-250 words and email us, and we will, you know, if we get enough of a response, maybe we can do another episode, or if we get, you know, two or three questions, we can always come back and do a side story and kind of cover these things.
Yes, and so, you know, we will happily do that.
yeah, we would love to, because again, all of this thing, writing is what we love to talk about, it's what we are constantly doing, so we would be more than happy to take specific examples, and well, you know, Holly would, you know, be able to help you maybe kind of figure out a way to debug your plot.
Mm-hmm. I am very good at helping people brainstorm,
because oh yes, I know you are
absolutely, yeah, terrifying questions to ask.
Yeah, she is fantastic. She was able to help me brainstorm through an octopus map, which is one of her things, from how to write a series.
Yes.
To save my entire series and plot out pretty much all of the books, and we spent maybe an hour on it, and it was just fantastic. And we're thinking about doing a couple of brainstorming episodes to live. So she will brainstorm with me, and we'll do that on air, and then we'll release the podcast so that you guys can hear it and kind of maybe even go through some of that yourself.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's it for today, and let's go over our social media real quick. Also, we would like to let you know that we are releasing this on Patreon early, so patrons will have a chance to listen to the episode before it gets released live.
Yes, big shout out to my Patreon yes. folks. Thank you.
Yeah, you guys are awesome. And everybody there, if you're a patron listening, everybody there gets the early copy of the podcast. So you will, even if you're in there for a dollar, you're going to get a copy of this podcast. Okay, so you can email us again. That's show@alonewithinvisiblepeople.com. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher. I'm not sure if we're on Google Play yet or not, but we're out there. And if you want, you can listen to us right on our site at alonewithinvisiblepeople.com. Or you can listen to us at Podbean, which is Holly Lyle, HollyLisle, .podbean.com. And you can listen to us there. We have an Instagram, which is @AIARWIP, or Twitter, which is also @AIARWIP. You can also use a search engine on either of those social media apps and look for Alone with Invisible People. And our Facebook page is Alone in a Room with Invisible People. You can follow us there as well. We are making a little bit of an offer here for people who can rate us on iTunes. Even if you don't use iTunes very often, you can still download the app and go in and find us on iTunes and rate us. We have two stories, one of Holly's, which is a sci-fi story that isn't necessarily connected to... Is it the same world, you said?
It's just not connected? It's set in settled space. Well, it is actually on... Bailey's Irish Space Station, but it does not take place with any of the known characters there. The title of it is Squick Studies, by the way, SQUICK, because it has stuff that's squicky in it.
Okay, so that is your story that you're giving away for people who review our iTunes, our podcast on iTunes. Mm-hmm. And I'm giving away, it's a 3,000 word or just under 3,000 words story. It's a ghost story. It's part of an anthology. That I am writing currently. That one is almost done. So by the time this podcast is out and everything, I'm going to have a revised version PDF. We will both email you a PDF. What you have to do is leave us a review on iTunes. And again, I will mention if there's anything about the podcast that you're not crazy about, we would prefer to have you contact us first, like if there's some sort of issue with the sound, something that we can fix. But again, if you love our show, if you love the podcast, if you love what we're doing here and you want to leave a review on iTunes, we would love for that to happen. Leave us a review. Let us know you left us the review. Go ahead.
I just thought of something really important. When you send us an email, we do not save your email addresses. We do not add you to a mailing list. If you want to do that, we have one that you can add yourself to. But we are very careful about GDPR compliance. And under no circumstances will we maintain personal information on you just because you sent us an email requesting the free story.
Yeah, no, I don't save any emails. Yeah, so it's the podcast will not save your email address or anything like that. So again, if you leave us a review, let us know, let us know what the username was or whatever it was. We'll take a look and we'll, verify that was a review from you. And then we will email you the two free stories. So you get one from me and you get one from Holly. All right. So, I believe that is it today.
That's it for me.
Okay. Yes. All right. Thank you so much for joining. And we hope that you have a great time writing. And I guess we'll see you on the next episode.
We'll see you soon.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
You want to write. You love words, you love fiction, but you don't know where to start, or how to middle, or where to finish. I do. I'm Holly Lyle, and I've been doing this professionally since 1991. And I know how I did what I did to go pro. And I'll be happy to show you what I've learned. Start with my free 3-week flash fiction class at hollyswritingclasses.com.